My name is Liz Robbins, and I am joined today by my dad, Pastor Brian Lange, in the studio. And today, we are talking about marriage and family in light of eternity. And all week, we will be talking about different topics in life in light of eternity. So you're going to be hearing this phrase a lot. And we're really excited to kind of unpack that idea with you today before we get into the specifics of marriage and family in light of eternity. But kind of how the show is going to go, just to give you an idea, is we are going to discuss that concept in light of eternity, what we mean when we say that, and then go right into, I really just kind of want to interview my dad, ask him some questions, get him talking about the concepts, biblical concepts in marriage and family that he's kind of had to develop and live out through his life. So, yeah, so let's dive right in. Dad, why don't you kind of just unpack this idea when we say in light of eternity, what is it that we're trying to say?
Well, first of all, it's really awesome to be here, and thank you for inviting me. It's great to be to have my daughter be the host of the radio show.
Really cool.
I hold marriage very, very dear, and it's a glorious institution after the institution of private entity that every person stands or falls before the Lord alone, and right after that we see marriage as the second institution, and then family, and that's what we're talking about today. But if you think about this is maybe a little bit abstract, but if you were to think about like God's face shining, you know, and God's face shines down on the marriage that is in heaven, in the book of Revelation, I was just reading it this morning in chapter 22, the angel takes John and says, I want to show you the bride, and which is the church comprised of all believers of all time. I want to show you the bride, and then the bride is presented to the bridegroom, who is Jesus Christ, who is our Savior, who laid down his life for us. So if the light of eternity would shine on the heavenly marriage, which is actually going to be here on earth, because the New Jerusalem comes down, and the bride is actually the New Jerusalem itself, a beautifully adorned bride. If that light were to shine on the heavenly marriage, then the shadow would be the earthly marriage.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So
I like that picture.
Yeah. So the earthly marriage, it's a type of something that's eternal, that's forever, and that's hugely profound. And so that's a great idea that when the Lord said to Adam, it's not good that you were alone. A lot of people say, well, Adam was single and he was like really, really needed to get married. But the Lord's mind was much beyond that. There's no way we're going to have people saved out of every nation and language and tongue and tribe unless we have a family. And so when he said, it's not good that you are alone, it's really, he's thinking community and people, and so the marriage is the starting point of that, and then of course family directly follows from that. All of it in the perspective that God is our Father in heaven, we are all children of God, that God manages his household, he disciplines everyone that he receives, he is the Father. His tribe, we would say, are his children. You know, and then of course Jesus Christ and his church is the bridegroom, and then the bride itself. So this is just massive, the idea of marriage, and a single person shouldn't reduce it down to marriage is like me not being alone.
It's bigger than that.
It's bigger than that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's beautiful to frame, like, before we really dive into marriage and family, to frame it in that context that it really is a type. It's like a it's not like a mirror image of what's happening in eternity, but it is a type. It is a way for us to have insight into something much, much deeper, actually, more profound and more eternal, long lasting, like something that has no beginning and no end, which is like God and eternity and what he has planned for humanity and for our eternity with him. This idea of Christ as the bridegroom and him taking his bride, and they will live happily ever after.
Yes, ever, the story ends
ever
well.
After. Like truly, they will live forever in eternity. And I think it's important that, like you said, for singles who are living a single life in whatever context that might be, whether they're young and they haven't gotten married yet, or they're older and they won't get married, or you know, all the different versions we can see. We were talking about that last night, the importance of framing our lives in eternal values, in eternal perspective. And we had kind of two things that we pointed out when we talk about this idea of living your life in light of eternity. There's two different aspects that we kind of pulled out. One is, first of all, just considering our life in terms of eternity as it pertains to time, that our life is so short. If you consider it in light of eternity, it says that our life is but a vapor, you know, like grass that grows and withers away. It's so short. It's so fleeting. We have that cliche. We all know it. Even though maybe the day drags on, life is short. Time is short. And as believers, we even more so recognize and we ask God to teach us to number our days, because we recognize that eternity is waiting for us. Our life is short. It has significance. It has value. But in that scheme of eternity, it is very short. And I find that not a sad concept, not a discouraging one, but a deeply comforting one, that I have whatever I do in this short life, I want it to have value in eternity, and it will, and it does. And then the second aspect of it was really more the essence of our values, that the way that we view the world, our perspective in life, it's really a framework. It's a worldview that we have because of our eternal perspective, meaning that what we value, what we recognize as important and significant, all of those things have to do with the unseen. And the unseen is the invisible world is the eternal one. God is spirit. He lives in eternity. And what he says matters is what we say matters. So that like eternal values, eternal perspective, I think is something that it's worth sitting and considering all throughout our lives. And you kind of, it's something I often will circle back to it when I'm in a difficult situation, when I'm hurting, when I'm discouraged, when I need comfort. Having the gift of eternal perspective is something that every Christian should cherish and should tap into, because it is something that provides comfort. It provides meaning in suffering. It provides thankfulness in difficult times. Like it's really such a gift to us. So I think that's something I'm hoping for in this episode, that the listeners would just be so encouraged to tap into that perspective more and more as we see the day approaching. Like we need eternal perspective in these days, right?
Yeah, we need eternal perspective. And you know, marriage is a relation, it's a certain kind of relationship. It's a unique kind of relationship, being married, you know. And but it's a kind of relationship in the body of Christ. Like marriages are part of the body of Christ, you know.
Yeah.
And being single is part of the body of Christ,
yes.
You know. And
yes.
And you know, if you read through the New Testament, you, especially in the Pauline epistles, but definitely James and Peter were concentrated on also on how do we treat each other as believers?
Yes.
You know, and that's where we see the backdrop of the in the light of eternity.
Mm.
The light of eternity is, how do you treat each other?
Yeah.
Because
knowing what we know,
that right? that being that is going to be the place where the love of Christ becomes evident.
Mm.
You know, and if, you know, Jesus said, well, how did he what did he say, how would people know that we are his disciples?
Yeah.
You know, and you would think, well, because of the way they act, because they're perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Because Christians are perfect.
Yeah.
They don't sin. You know, they always do the right thing. So that's how you know they're his disciples.
Mm.
It's like, no.
No.
That's not how you're going to know. And in fact, he kind of, by leaving us in this body of sin and death, he kind of made that a really, really frustrating goal.
Yeah.
If you think that that's the case, that your brother,
mm-hmm.
if he's really manifesting Christ, he's going to be perfect. And if I'm really manifesting Christ, I'm going to be perfect. If you think that's the case, then you're going to be judging yourself and your brother, and the worst kind of evil is going to come out of you.
Yeah.
Because that's not, that's not eternal perspective.
Mm.
Eternal perspective is, this is a marriage. This is a special relationship, and the center of it is the Song of Solomon. You know,
mm-hmm.
the center of it is love, like irrational, irrational, passionate love for another person, so much so that you overlook their faults.
Mm.
You
yeah.
take a lot of abuse, and yeah. I'm not advocating if you're being abused today by someone, you should reach out and,
yes.
and you should act and get some help with it. But we know it makes me think of Richard Wurmbrand. I think of this often, you know.
Yeah.
Richard Wurmbrand, okay, so for those who don't know, he's a Romanian pastor. Back in the days of Ceausescu, so in the 70s and the 80s, he was a horrible communist he was under a horrible communist dictatorship.
Yes.
And he was arrested. He was tortured for 14 years. And his conclusion was, if I can love the next person I see, I will mm-hmm. survive.
Yeah.
That's all.
You mentioned that last week, and I think it does go very well this week again, because what he's saying is, if I can have eternal perspective, I can survive this day. I can survive whatever comes, because love really is having God's eternal perspective for you personally and then for the people around you. So I think that it's a very boiled down, very simple, you know, it's the clearest way you can put it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think that, before we are going to get into kind of more the interview part of our episode, but, I think it's important that before we talk about marriage and family in light of eternity, that we recognize that not everybody will have marriage in their lives. Not everybody will have children and family in their lives. And what we're saying is that eternity and having this eternal perspective on your life means that every person, whatever you're called to, whatever roles you do or do not have, each one of us is called to walk before God and to know him, to know his love. To know his love, and then to glorify him. And how do we glorify him? By loving one another. Like Jesus said, that they will know that you are mine by your love. And that is not unique to marriage. Like you said, most of the epistles, they're not talking to
married couples. Yeah.
They're saying, you know, when they say outdo one another in honor, I love that. I love it in marriage. It's a great principle in marriage that I think about often, but it's not a marriage principle. It's a disciple principle. It's a person who's following Christ. This is how you glorify God with your life, with your short little vapor that we are given as a gift before we live eternity with him. We get to know him. He's revealed himself to each one of us, and then we get to glorify him. And that's just an eternal truth. Like I was saying, it's like a universal Christian truth that is true in every generation, every time in history, for every person in every situation. We get to know him and glorify him, And really, it's to know his love and to love others. Because it says that when you love others, you're loving him, right? In 1 John. So, and then the other, I think, really just simple but important aspect of that eternal value system that we're talking about is the value of each and every soul. And I think, again, not unique to marriage and family, but universally true, that what God has revealed to us through his word and through Christ coming and dying for the least of these, for the worst sinner, is he is saying that every soul, every person is made in my image. They carry my image in them, and they have value that is eternal. It cannot be valued by earthly, temporal things. You cannot put a number on the value of a person. And you can put a number of value on a lot of things in the world, but that is something that is so beautiful. It's just so fundamental to the way that we think about people. And I think people who aren't believers don't even realize how important that principle is in their lives, that you have value no matter what you do, what you produce, what you contribute to society. And I think that having that as a part of your value system transforms the way it if it's really integrated into your heart, it transforms the way you think about yourself, right? Like, that's a huge one. Just how you think about yourself, your value, your sense of worth, and then how you think about others. It's like transformative. So I don't know if there's anything else you want to contribute before I start peppering you with questions.
Well,
you got anything else?
So if you look, there's a combination. If you add Colossians chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, you add that to Romans chapter 11, verse 36.
Yes.
Then you get that he was before all things, and then all things were from him, through him, for him, and to him.
Mm.
You know, it's true with marriage for sure. Marriage, he was before all things.
Yeah.
So marriage came from him. It came through him. It is for him, and it's to him. The entire picture, and this is where I'll talk about the blurry background.
Mm.
Okay, we'll do that now. So if you're looking at me now, this is more than a radio show. This is a video radio show.
Yes.
But if you're looking at me now, you'll see my face is very focused and the background is very blurry.
Mm-hmm.
And I use it as an illustration. So eternal things can become very blurry to us. And then the things that seem so real,
right,
are the
visible
things that are in very clear focus. And when your life, when your present life becomes what's really in focus, and the eternal things get blurry in the background, then God will work in your life to bring the background into focus.
Mm.
You know, and if you think about
that's good.
If you think about what's happening in the world today with
wars, you know,
the Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan just saying that he's on the verge of declaring war on Israel, that Xi Jinping in China, that Putin in Russia are collaborating, that the world is becoming pro-Hamas,
mm-hmm,
and Palestine, and that they are the poor ones, and Israel is becoming the bad guy on our planet. When you see that happening, it's only the Lord saying, bring the eternal into focus. I'm the one who's working in human history.
Mm.
Don't think these things are out of control, that there's no plan, that we are destined for destruction. That's not true. But it is what you think it is true if the eternal is not in focus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's true that, oh my gosh, I'm single. I'm 45 years old. I'm past the age of having a child, having a family. You could that is so true if the now is in focus. But if the eternal comes into focus, then the Lord would say, time is short, young man, young woman, time is short.
Mm.
The, cast your burdens upon me, pray and let me know your supplications and your needs, and just trust me because time is short and I'm coming back soon.
Yeah.
And consume yourself with just pleasing me rather than having this temporal need. And it very much is a temporal need because the Lord said there's no marriage in heaven for us. There's only one marriage in heaven.
Right.
It's Jesus with his church. There's no marriages. There's no families. Mm. You know, just one family and one marriage. So all of this is temporal. And so that all of those needs kind of all of a sudden the backdrop starts coming into focus.
Yeah, that's a good way of seeing it. I like that a lot.
And the Lord does that. Like life is like that. We become COVID happened, and everybody's thinking about their death, and it's like, oh, really? And all of a sudden, this background starts to come into view.
Right. And it's always been there. The background is reality, right? Like eternity is the ultimate reality. It doesn't diminish what's happening in our lives. But again, it adds perspective to what's happening in our lives. So I really like the idea that God, in his kindness, in his goodness, he desires us to have a crisp focus on the eternal things. And he will work in our lives to do that because he cares. And he wants us to be walking circumspectly, right? Which is like that idea that I am walking with my eyes wide open. Open to what? To the eternal things, to the that we would see him that is unseen. And I think that it's a great way to think about our marriages and our families or our lack of those things, because it's that perspective that is going to give us an accurate perspective on our lives, all the different lives that each one of us is living. So,
but maybe I know you want to ask me some questions. But
I do. I really do.
But the culture we're living in, the me culture that we live in, especially in the West, but the very me-centered and now culture that we live in, it can really take away the very things that eternal perspective and eternal life gives us, which is joy and peace love. Those things flow from eternal life, from Zoe life, right?
Yes.
Which is the life that has no end. But if there's two groups of people. There are people who are not married who want to be so badly that they would do anything to do it. They think about it daily of how their years are passing and what it would be like to be married and marriage is beautiful. They're not wrong for thinking like that. Marriage is amazing. But there's another group of people also. There's people who are married and don't want to be. Both of those people are being attacked
the irony.
By the me culture.
Yes.
And by so many other things in our culture now. Social media is an attack on marriage because you spend your time with somebody other than the person that you are married to.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And seeing other people's lives that you do not have.
Video games and pornography,
yep.
Such an attack in many, many ways with the underlying philosophy that my pleasure and I am the most important person here and the one that God has to do what I want him to do because that's what this is what I need to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
So, so again, that eternal perspective also. Marriage is incredible. We're going to talk about it. I've been madly in love I've been married for 44 years, but I was in love long before that. For 5 years, we were boyfriend and girlfriend, and my girlfriend and I even lived together, before we were following Christ. Mm-hmm. I love marriage. I think marriage is awesome,
Yes.
But on the other hand, I'm a marriage counselor. Mm-hmm. And there are people who are married who would do anything to redo it. Could I get another shot at this?
You've seen a lot. That also probably gives you a lot of perspective. So, well, that's good you mentioned that because that was one of my first questions I wanted to ask you.
Mm.
I am, of course, the fruit of your love with my mom, Paula. But you mentioned that when you started to follow the Lord, you were living with your girlfriend, who is now your wife, and you made the decision to move out. And why did you do that? When you loved her, I mean, she was the love of your life, your high school sweetheart. You guys had been dating for a long time at that point. So what was it about your perspective on life that made you move out?
Well, it was a bit of a process. When I got saved in high school, but I didn't really know I was for 2 years.
Yeah.
I remembered that I was like 2.5 years later when finally I came to, I really realized like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I do believe in Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
And it was the Jehovah's Witnesses that helped me along that way. They gave me a Bible and I read about Jesus. You know,
crazy.
I'd read about Sri Chinmui and you know, this
transcendental meditation. Yeah, I remember you mentioning
gurus
that.
Gurus and whatever.
Yeah.
Timothy Leary. But when I really read about Jesus, I said, this is absolutely the coolest guy that's ever walked this planet. And I want to live like him. Like, I want to live like he.
Yeah.
He didn't care about people. He didn't care about politics. He didn't care what people thought of him, but he cared about people.
Yeah.
You know, and he didn't have a house. You know, he didn't know where he was going to get a meal.
Yeah.
Like he was just like living an incredible life.
Yeah.
But anyway, so your mom and I were living together when that happened, when I met the Jehovah's Witnesses, and she said, get rid of them. They're weirdos,
mm-hmm.
which is true.
She was right,
but,
as usual.
But the Lord, I think the Lord said, now's the time. We got to get him a Bible, you know. Well, it's not a great translation, but it'll do, you know. And
oh,
literally, I read the New World Translation and
which we do not recommend.
Which we don't recommend. But Jesus was there.
Yes.
And he met me. And it connected my 20-year-old life to my 17-year-old life when
mm-hmm.
I actually prayed to receive the Lord.
Yeah.
And boom. And I was a disciple.
And your girlfriend was not a believer.
And my girlfriend was like, what have you done now? You know,
yeah. Just ruining everything.
Like you from LSD culture to Yaqui Indian sorcery
to
Buddhism. And now, like, what is happening to you? So Paula was a kind of a, she was a good Catholic girl, you know. She had her act together. Like, mom had her act together.
Mm.
And clearly I did not. So she thought, well, he needs something, you know.
Yeah.
But she didn't feel like she needed it.
She didn't need it, yeah.
Yeah, because it was kind of extreme, you know. But I was an extreme kind of person, like, I was in extreme trouble.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm going to make a short story really, really long, but but so we ended up, so I was, you know, as we drove, we bought a 1953 Chevy pickup truck. We called her Lizzie.
Yeah.
That truck was called Lizzie. It drove us from Ketchum, Idaho, where we were living, all the way across the United States. And as we were going, it's like, things were dropping off of my life. Like, I never took drugs after that. I stopped drinking. Not like I'm going to stop drinking. It just, things were just like falling out of this truck, you know?
Wow.
Like, my life was changing as we were driving east.
Yeah.
And by the time we got out east, we were still living together. We were still madly in love and even talking about marriage. I didn't ask her to marry me, but we were talking about it. And so we ended up in this little trailer in Au Sable Falls. It was amazing in the Adirondack Mountains. It was really beautiful working at the Hilton there in Lake Placid. And I was like, oh my gosh, I shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah.
This is, you know, and Paula's, you know, we're like, I'm
life
changing.
Yeah, you're improving.
I'm changing, and our relationship is becoming really stressful for me. But I still like, I'm madly in love with this person. But
yeah. But
we can't live like this. And then make matters even worse, I read 2 Corinthians 6 that you shouldn't be unequally yoked with an unbeliever.
Double whammy.
And it was like,
yeah.
Oh, Paula, I'm out of here. I got to go. I got to go. And she said, what has happened to you? You are, I said, I know. But, and she said, I'm not going to become a Christian just to marry you. I said, I don't want you to. I mean, I don't want you to do anything that you don't want to do, but I'm just telling you, I can't take this anymore. I mean, I'm going to have a heart attack or something, which I did eventually have in 2040.
Those are not connected
48
events.
Years later.
Did you throw that one back on mom? No, I told you.
So I left, you know, and left her alone there in our little trailer. And
yeah, that must have been
left
pretty
intense.
Left
her with the car and, you know, I mean.
But again, I asked that question because I do feel like it was a moment in your life where what you believed about eternity affected your present situation that you were in. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's why I wanted to hear about that a little bit, because it was at the beginning of you really becoming a disciple and asking God, like, here I am, and really going all in. And it was an aspect of your life that, in light of eternity, in what you now believed and had accepted and surrendered to, you knew that it wasn't right.
Yeah.
And so you had to make this
painful decision.
Well,
it was
more
organic than that also. It wasn't like I was learning something and my worldview was changing. It was like I was literally changing.
Yeah.
Like, no, me. It's, I know that God doesn't want me to do this. I can't do this.
Yeah.
With who I am right now. I can't do this.
Which ultimately, of course, mom respected that a lot about you, that you're a man of conviction. And over the years, that has played out in a lot of different ways. But at that point, it was very inconvenient for her, I can imagine. But everybody listening, fear not. It worked out, obviously, because here we are, and you married that woman.
Well, she
became a believer.
I moved back to Burn Hills, where we both grew up. She moved back eventually, and we picked apples. It was during the fall, so we were apple pickers. Knight's Orchard, you know, and orchards everywhere where I grew up. So we would pick apples and talk. We were still like best friends, you know.
Yeah.
She was super interested. She came to Bible study and said, "That was weird." Those are weird people.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, but they were my peeps in a way, you know. Mm-hmm. So actually, not in a way, they were my peeps, and they were my growing community. And eventually there was an evangelist who came, Brian Rudd came, and that evangelist gave an altar call, and mom said, "That's for me."
Yeah.
And I think he might have done an evangelistic thing, kind of, as I remember, he said something like, "For some of you here, this will be the last chance you will have."
Wow, that's a good
to get
voice.
Saved.
You should use that voice more often, Dad.
This will be the last chance you have to get saved.
And that
he might have. I don't know, but she accepted Christ, you know. And as soon as she accepted Christ, I said, "Will you marry me?"
Oh my gosh.
As soon as she did, because that,
like,
that was
back
like tick
on.
The box.
It's back on. Full speed
box.
Ahead.
And I said, are you a, do you feel like you're just a you, or do you feel like you are a we? And she said, I said, "When you think about your future."
You know?
And she said, "I feel like I'm a we." I said, "Me too. Will you marry me?" She said, "Yes." I said, "When?" And she said, "Well, we have to plan a wedding. It's going to take at least 3 months, you know." I said, "Could you do it in 6 weeks?" So we got married 6 weeks later.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well,
I wouldn't advise
that. I'm real glad you did.
But we had been dating for a long time. So.
Yes, yes.
So
no, this is not advice. Yeah, we're just hearing how the thing played out.
We're not telling you how you should do it.
Yes.
We're just telling you how it happens.
Yeah.
It can happen that way.
Okay, so then you guys got married and you had three kids and you had a good job, engineering, but you were also, you had gone to Bible school and you decided to quit your job and take your wife and your three kids. I think I was one, and then it was a 3 and 5 year old must have been, to go on the mission field. So again, I want to know why you did that. Like, did you consider the practical, your wife and your kids and your family and your marriage when you made that decision?
Well, I was just talking to your mom last night about that, and she said, "Brian, remember, we didn't go on the mission field for 14 years.
Yeah.
We went on the mission field for 6 months."
Right. That was the initial proposition.
We had saved money.
Mm-hmm.
$1,000 a month, not a lot of money. It's still poverty level.
Yeah.
We saved money, and we had already visited there. We stayed in Teresa and Terry Labar's. They were just married, so they mm-hmm. were on a honeymoon. So we stayed in their apartment.
In France,
yeah. to check it out. We both spoke French. Mm-hmm. You know, Louis DeMeo came to our church, which gave us the idea, and he did a little diapo. You know, he did a slideshow, and I said, Paul, I think we should go to France. Let's pray about going to France. You know, and she was like, oh, because we love French, and she wanted to be a French teacher. You know, mm-hmm. so we both had a heart for French, and for we didn't know anybody there. You know, Pastor yeah. DeMeo, we didn't know him.
Yeah.
And we decided to go. You know, my philosophy is always, we're not doing anything without agreement. Like, I'm not dragging my wife anywhere. Mm. This isn't like, God told me and you're coming.
Right.
Or you stay and I'm going or something.
Yeah,
you know, it's like, no, we're going together or we're not going at all. That was an overriding kind of overruling principle that we lived with. So we decided to go, but we went literally for 6 months. So it kind of crept up on us. You know?
The 14 years crept
up
on
us? Yeah, the 14 years crept up on
us. Oops.
We were poverty stricken.
Yeah.
You know, I
like that though. I think that that's a good thing for people to hear. This is not an episode on missions, but just that in terms of family and marriage and making decisions that you can just say, let's just try something together. Like, you're in it together. Let's try it and see how it goes and see what God does. And it doesn't have to be that it's forever. You know, you can just kind of just take a leap, whether it's missions or any big life decision. You're doing it together. You believe that God's in it. And then you'd be surprised looking back on what God does with those leaps of faith, you know? So again, yeah, I think it's cool to hear you talk about that because it does speak to the fact that you guys as a couple and then with three little kids, you guys had eternity in mind and what you wanted to spend your time doing, where you wanted to raise your kids, how you wanted to raise your kids was all a part of that. They weren't like separate. You know what I mean? And you had mentioned when we were talking about this that you had a lot of pushback, especially from family that, you know, wasn't of the same mind, wasn't seeing things the same way. That had a lot of concerns about you as the head of your family making this choice, this crazy yeah. radical choice.
Well, it wasn't the first choice. You know, the first one was when your brother was only 9 months old, and I decided that I want to go to Bible college. Actually, I really felt like God wanted me to go to Bible college because mm-hmm. I was deciding whether I was going to go to Bible college or go back to engineering university mm-hmm. to finish my engineering degree because I was kind of gifted at engineering and I realized it like, oh, yeah. this is, you know, this could end up with some...
Set you up pretty.
Yeah, it could set me up. Yeah, I'm good at this. So, and people told me I was good at it. But then I visited the Bible college and I had a big decision to make because they already accepted me back even though I dropped out, you know, I mm-hmm. completely left right before finals. Failed the entire semester and paid for it. It was the only semester I had to pay for. And it was the one I completely failed.
You're just airing this all out.
Yeah. So, but anyway, we made that decision to go and with your brother. Literally it was like, we're signing a vow of poverty, you know, uh-huh. because, you know, I was like trying to sell energy products. I'm a horrible salesman.
yeah, that was
Joe Circatella was a great boss, but he was my boss.
But the family was not supportive.
No, not at all. And we were literally, I mean, we were poverty. We lived in Lennox apartments and our marriage was, we had some struggles because your mom was watching me like outperforming them all in the world of Bible college.
Yeah.
I was gone all weekend knocking on doors and doing bus ministry. I was gone every night. I was in Bible college. Mm. Every day I was gone to work, mm-hmm. you know, and she was at home. Mom wasn't like this amazing spirit filled. She was spirit filled,
yeah.
but her spirit filling was trying to keep this little tribe of people.
Yeah.
Which, you know, the second came and then the third came. And
yep.
So, our marriage grew as a consequence of all of it. And your mom, thankfully, we just really, really cared about each other.
Yeah.
You know, and that care for each other caused us to, that's what made no matter where we were home.
Mm-hmm.
And it made no matter what we, you know, what we were going through, we went through it together. And that, and when things weren't good between us, you know, I took it seriously.
Yeah.
It was no small thing.
I can very much attest to that, that over the years, I think, because of course you're two very different people, but I would see situations where mom was unhappy with maybe how things were going, and you would take that very seriously, and it would be like full pause. And I could tell that she never felt that she couldn't communicate her unhappiness. Because even on the mission field, I mean, we had tough times. We had money was tight at different times. Just having three kids and all of us being the different challenges that we were. And then you being very active in the ministry. I think that's a good transition because I wanted to ask you about that, like that balance between family and marriage and ministry. And I do think that a lot of people can mismanage that. I have heard of that from other friends of mine, other pastors' kids who are now adults who they struggled with that, maybe a little bit of resentment that they felt that balance wasn't there, that maybe they were put to the side. And I can say that, of course, you guys weren't perfect, but I do feel confident to say that looking back, the way that you viewed your family and your marriage, in addition to your call to be a pastor and a counselor and a minister that you were, you really focused a lot on making sure that mom felt heard, that mom's desires, like that, the balance, if there is balance, the balance, I think, was just that open line of communication where you honored and respected her enough that if she spoke up, you took it very seriously. And you weren't like, no, get over it. Get on board with what I'm doing. But it was like you guys were doing that together. That was my view of it.
Well,
you say
sometimes
that's accurate?
She had to say it a little louder than others, you know?
Yeah.
Because, I think I, like many men, can be a little bit numb to just not catch the cues exactly, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So,
she had to spell it
out. But she had the chutzpah, you know, the gumption.
Mm-hmm.
To say I'm not being satisfied with a bad marriage.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna make trouble.
Well, I think that's a great call out to us women. Like I think, and we can call out the men too. But for me, what I hear when you say that is that it's my place in my marriage to communicate with my husband what I need, and if I don't clearly do that, and maybe sometimes with a little bit of force, if he's not hearing me, not with like anger or whatever, but like persistence, I guess there's got to be persistence sometimes, but that, that's something that I can have confidence in is that's a role that I play because, as women, as wives and as mothers, we can have an intuition about a sense of how the home is doing, how our family is doing, that it could be that our husbands are missing it within all the hats that they're wearing, all the roles that they're playing, that I need to maybe draw attention to a situation or, hey, we need to talk about this or this is something this needs to change, basically. And I've had that happen in our marriage too, where especially with young kids, we've always been active, whether it was with missions or just in our church and serving and wanting to be involved. And there's been times when I've had to be like, hey, this isn't working. And that didn't make me the not spiritual one. If anything, it made me the one maybe more attuned to what our family needed, which God is very much in the business of caring about what our families need. So it's not pitting a spiritual husband against the practical wife or something, but it's that we both have something to offer. And bringing that to the forefront is an important and very necessary thing to have confidence in as a wife, I guess. And I think I saw that in mom. But I think it was really because you heard her, you know? And so that maybe could be the call out to the men, is to be sure that your ears are open and not just open, but wanting to hear from your wife, about these issues when it comes to balance, not just ministry, but work also, right? When you have careers, business that is involved with your family and your kids, that men would have a desire to hear from their wives and not want to tune them out. Like that in their heart, it would be like, God forbid that I would tune out the voice of my wife. If anything, I want to turn her up and listen to her because she's important, right?
Yeah. Because if you don't turn up your volume to listen to her, she'll turn up her volume.
Yeah, right.
To be listened to, you know?
And, yeah.
And then that starts to really feel wrong, you know?
Mm-hmm. We started a little late, so how much time do we have, Seb? Should we end it? Yeah. All right. So let's just wrap it up really quick. I had other questions for you that we didn't get to, but I think when we talk about marriage in light of eternity and family in light of eternity, what is like one more thought that you would want to leave the people with?
Well, I think what the Lord teaches us, a false balance is an abomination to the Lord. You know, like balance is everything. And if it's all ministry, if your whole, well, let me say this also, that I wanted to have our house be a place where everyone knows that we are serving Jesus, you know, and not the church. Because a church has needs.
Yes.
You know, a church has
big
needs,
difference.
Some of the very practical needs. And also, when you are a leader in a church like I was, then, and there's many new believers there and many new disciples, then you have lots of opportunity.
Yes.
And beyond opportunity, you're being pulled
right
into more activity
need.
And more because of the impact. And the impact has its own, you know, has its own reward inside of our own physiology, you know.
Yeah.
You're catching dopamine rushes off of like ministering, which are amazing, you know. But I want, you know, there's a thing called a SWOT analysis. I just learned this, but it's very relevant. And one is you go over your strengths. So what are the strengths of our marriage? What are the weaknesses of our marriage or our family?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, they go together.
And the marriage, then your wife is involved or your husband.
Yeah.
And then your family, your kids are involved. So what are the strengths? What are the weaknesses? What are our opportunities and what are the threats to us, you know? And I think we tend to, like, if there's a lot of strengths happening, a lot of ministry, a lot of cool things are going on, then you don't realize, you know, but there are weaknesses and threats that you're not paying attention to.
Yeah.
That you know what kind of signals are being sent. And I never wanted the signals to be, I love my church or my work more than I love my wife, that my wife would ever say, you'd be a lot happier without me.
Yeah.
Or my kids would say, Dad, you'd be a lot happier without me. You're just like out there. You're like Superman. You're like doing amazing things.
Yeah, we're just in the way.
And like, you're just going to spend
God
time
forbid.
With me. You're just going to,
right?
You know, we're just going to sit home and watch a Disney movie or something. God forbid we'd watch a Disney movie. But
well, that's a good point that I know we're going to wrap up here is that when you live in light of eternity, the value that you place on things has nothing to do with the worldly evaluations like money or recognition, number of people, right? But the value comes from the fact that we are walking before the Lord and He has given us something to do, whatever it is. And I know as a mother, when you're cutting up apples or changing diapers or you're pushing your kid on the swing again, you can start to ask yourself, what value am I, what do I have to offer? And the question is the why, it's the why behind it. It's that background that needs to come into focus, that God's given you a person, a family, a marriage to sow into, and it has incredible eternal value. And so those mundane things, yes, they might feel mundane, but their value is eternal. And when we have an eternal perspective, the things that God gives us to do, including the mundane, including the 9-to-5 job, whatever it would be, that it has eternal value when we do it unto the Lord, because all things are from Him and through Him and to Him.
Yes.
Right?
They have the Creator's glow.
Yeah.
Because of the Creator's purpose, the Creator's provisions.
Yeah.
You know, and then ultimately it reveals an eternal reality. Yeah.
All right, so that's all the time we have.
That's all we got.
But thank you so much for joining us today, and please don't forget to subscribe and tune in to this week. We're going to be continuing to talk on this topic of life in light of eternity. So thanks for joining us today.
Bye, everyone.